chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Rachel Wallace Andreessen on the show today. Rachel is a business executive, author, and collaborator. So Rachel Wallace Andreessen, welcome to the Something Extra Podcast. I am so delighted to have you on the show today.
I'm so excited to be here, Lisa. It's just an honor and glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun, you know, and I know that you are too, but I'm incredibly grateful to our mutual friend, Don Gunther. Yes, Don, such an amazing human being, isn't he? He was our vice president of sales for several years, and now he's sailed off into retirement, but I laughingly say, I don't think he's retired. Because he keeps
definitely not
picking up new things to do. And that's just Dawn. But I just remember him telling me, Lisa, you got to meet my friend, you know, Rachel Wallace Andreessen. And sure enough, when we met, I'm like, okay, I see why you wanted us to meet. And so I'm just really excited to have you on the show and for our listeners to hear your story. And I just remember being so impressed with your family's legacy and what you've built at Wallace. And, you know, I want our listeners to learn from you, Rachel. But really, before we get into all that, I'd love for you to take me back to your dad's story, because it kind of began with your dad, Bill Wallace. And take me back to kind of how he grew up and what happened with him and that kind of pushed him into what, you know, what he ultimately built.
Yes, yeah, it really is a true entrepreneur American story. He had two younger sisters. One actually died of leukemia when she was 10. And my grandma was distraught. And my grandpa said, he always had like a sixth sense. So he said, Jen, our troubles are not over yet. And 9 months later, he died in a work accident at an asphalt plant. So there my grandmother was. She had five other living children, and my dad was the youngest boy. And so she had to go to work for the first time, and she went to as a cook in town, and my dad went to work too to just help support the family. So she would drive him to Onondaga Cave. He would put stickers on cars and worked there until he was able to become a guide. And then that's when he met Chester Morris, who had a gas station in Sullivan. And my dad said, I want to start working at the gas station. So I guess just bottom line is he loved the gas station business. He loved interacting with the customers, you know, checking their oil, doing their windshield. And eventually he graduated high school and he took over Chester's business and then built up to four total gas stations in the Sullivan area and was helping his younger sister go to Mizzou. And when she decided not to go back, he enlisted in the 101st Airborne because originally he had the draft deferment, but now because he wasn't supporting his sister anymore, he enlisted. And then when he got done serving, he actually worked at his dad's asphalt company for a short time. But then his mom told him there was a gas station for sale on Route 66 in Cuba, Missouri. And he bought that gas station from Tippy Counts in May of 1968. And that is where Wallace Company started.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think, Rachel, and I don't want to date you, but in that the year, didn't he buy that the year you were born?
So I was born the next year. I just turned 55.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so he bought it in May and his brother helped him out, his older brother. And then he married my mom that December. And then I was born the next year. Yes. Yeah. And so, then we built our first location at Leesburg, Missouri, which is where my dad grew up, right on Interstate 44. You know, and at that time, Route 66 was still the primary highway as they were building Interstate 44. So dad just had a vision for thinking about the future and, in setting our company up for success.
Yeah. And successful it is. And we'll talk more about that. But, you know, you and your siblings basically grew up in the business. And I bet, Rachel, that you had a lot of jobs in the business.
We laugh about it a lot. One of the jobs was my dad emptying the car wash, you know, with the quarters and bringing them home to the dining room table and us sitting around and rolling quarters so he could take them to the bank. So, and then helping my mom do bank reconciliations and just, you know, driving on a Saturday with my dad going to talk to the employees at the store. So yeah, it was a lot of jobs, a lot of fun jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I bet, I mean, what do you believe just growing up watching that? Because that's not always, and your dad didn't have that. You know, he didn't have a parent. I mean, his father had passed away. He didn't have a father that he could watch, right? But, you know, so a lot of people don't have that. But what would you say are some of those lessons that you learned just watching your dad and this, you know, fiery entrepreneurial spirit that he had?
Yeah, definitely a strong work ethic. Definitely caring about people. Dad always credited all the people around him, you know, with the success of the business, and always said, surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. And dad just had a lot of trust in people. And he also had just good, you know, street smarts of knowing who to trust and who to surround himself with. And he loved interacting with the customer. So everything that he built was, you know, from scratch and all from hard work and taking care of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, honestly, it sounds simple, but it's very profound. Really hard work and taking care of people, whether it is your employees or your customers, right? So really important.
Yes.
So you went on to get a business degree from Tulane, and then you have also an MBA from WashU. Were there ever any other career contenders for you, Rachel, or did you just know inherently that you were going to be a businesswoman?
Yeah, I think I loved my dad, and I would take long walks, and I would love, you know, just talking to him about the business, and then you would share the P&Ls and, you know, just learning in high school and just asking questions. So I always knew I wanted to eventually work for the family business. I also knew that I didn't want to start working for it because, as you know, with family businesses, it's like, you know, you also want to know for yourself that you can bring value to the company that, you know, that is your family business. And so I worked elsewhere. But when mom and dad were working on the largest acquisition in 1993, buying Mobile Oil Corporation's 47 properties in St. Louis, they came to Florida and said, if there's ever a time you wish to join the family business, now would be a good time because we need people, because we were, yeah, literally doubling the size of the company. So that is when I joined officially in 1993 and then worked there until the year of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you eventually became the CEO. We'll talk about that. But, you know, I was going to ask you that because you do, I've talked to so many, and of course, you know, I would say that we have a family business, you know, Greg and I started our company 30 years ago, but I've talked to so many family businesses and they say your kids really don't, that doesn't need to be, you don't need to be their first boss. Right. Really.
Yes,
you
know, yes,
go work
yes.
somewhere else. Right. And then come into the business. And I think that's really wise advice. So yeah, I was going to ask you about that, you know, that conversation in 1993, was that your dad and your mom approaching you or vice versa? And it kind of sounds like they approached you and said, hey, if you ever thought you wanted to come in, now would be the time because we need help.
Yes. Right? Yeah, they definitely came to Florida to visit for the weekend and yeah, said that this acquisition looks like it's going through and yeah, we would love for you to come back and join. And, you know, at the same time, they were also asking, like, I have a cousin. And so they were, yeah, recruiting people and, mm-hmm. and it was great. I mean, it was the right time to enter the business. I'm the oldest. I have three younger brothers. So they, you know, as I got out of college, the next one was just starting college. So, but they all followed that same pattern of going to college, working someplace else, and then eventually coming back to join the family business, which has been great. You know, family businesses can be super rewarding. And they can be hard too, because lots of people don't even have a family business and have a hard time getting along with their family. So, you know, family's hard and family businesses are tough, but they're extremely rewarding as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. Thank you. You set me up. That was the perfect segue. And we didn't even talk about this, but I do want you to talk about Wallace a little bit more, but because you guys do a lot, but you know, I think what you've created, and this is what I was just so impressed with when we talked with one another, is just the legacy. And I know you know the stats, but maybe our listeners don't, you know, so I want to go over a few of these. The average lifespan of a family-owned business is 24 years. Your dad founded it in 1968, so the business is 56 years old. So you guys have already blown that stat out of the water, you know. Family businesses account for 83 million jobs, and they make up 59% of our country's private workforce. 59%. I mean, family businesses are really, really important to our economy. 40% of family, get this, 40% of family-owned businesses will turn into second-generation businesses. Only 40%. So the fact yes. that you guys, you know, you came in as second generation, I mean, again, you blew that stat out of the water. Here was an interesting, this is Harvard Business Review, says family businesses retain talent better than the competition because they create a culture of commitment and purpose, and they have a very strong affinity for investing in their people. And so I know the culture has been incredibly important at Wallace, but take us back, because our listeners, some of our listeners may not know everything you guys do, and you guys do a lot. So, you know, give me that, if you would, about, you know, Wallace and all the service lines that you guys are in, Rachel, and then let's talk about culture a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, we started with that one location on Route 66. That year, that one location did $100,000 in revenue. Today, our company will do over $1.5 billion in revenue. So our primary, we have five operating divisions, and the primary one is our convenience stores. And just what you were saying about culture and taking care of the people, I do believe in my heart of hearts, that is why we were able to purchase the Taylor family business with the UGas and Dirt Cheap stores, because when you lined up all of the large companies wanting to buy their assets in St. Louis, they knew that we would, as a family, take care of their employees. And so that's, yeah, so that's another story. Mm-hmm. But in addition to the convenience stores that we own and operate, which is 65 of them under On the Run or Dirt Cheap brand, we also supply about another 200 locations. So these are independent, we call them dealers, independent business people that own their own property, and that we supply them fuel. We also have a car wash division, the Brightworks Car Wash, tunnel washes, and they're throughout St. Louis. We have our own transport division, which hauls 80% of the fuel for our convenience stores. And then we have a commercial fuels division where it's tanker load pricing, and we don't always haul that. So those are the five operating divisions. And then we have our support divisions, which supports all of the people through training and development, all of our benefits and compensation, and our IT services, which all of those together at the time, that was one of my divisions, and we called it organizational services because, you know, it was the service the organization provided to support our people, giving them the resources and tools and education and benefits that they needed to feel good about working for the company and ultimately in the end, taking care of our customers. Mm-hmm. And then I did forget our lubricant business. We do have Wallace Lubricant. And so we have three different plants in Pacific, Joplin, Kansas City, and then we just recently did an acquisition in Jefferson City, Missouri. So we are ExxonMobil lubricant supplier. So it's under their brand. And most all of our own convenience stores are under the Mobil Fuel brand. And then we also have BP and ConocoPhillips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, it's a lot. You guys,
it's a lot.
A lot, you know, starting in that one gas station, you know, that your dad bought, which is really amazing. You know, well, you've already talked a lot. I think, you know, I was going to ask you, like, you know, you guys have survived past the average that most family businesses. And I just think a lot of it is taking care of your people. You know, there's foresight and vision and those kind of things that have really helped you guys be successful and smart. I mean, you've made smart moves along the way.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm most proud of is just, you know, just the family environment, the level of ownership, because we use the balanced scorecard methodology. Mobil Oil Corporation was a case study for Harvard Business in the late 1990s, and they brought that to us. But it just helps educate our entire workforce. It helps aligns us to the key elements, and then we share in that compensation based on the success. So, yeah, it's really, it's just, I don't know. It does make me so proud, you know, when you talk to different team members and they know they're working for a family business. They know we care about them. And, you know, just our business is hard. It's 24 hours, 7 days a week. You always feel on if you're in management. And we have such strong, passionate, smart individuals that work for us that give so much. You know, everyone spends, if you're working full time, you're spending more time with your teammates than you are with your family. And yeah, we're so appreciative of the great job that all of our team members do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had the privilege of coming to your headquarters in Cuba, and you and I walked the halls, and you knew people. You're like, oh, how are you doing? You know, I mean, you would call them by name, Rachel, and it just, I just felt that. I felt that family, and it's hard, though, isn't it? The bigger you get, you know, it's hard to still have that consistent culture that you started when, you know, when the company was smaller. It is difficult, but yes. I can tell you guys are super intentional about how you go about it. So what would you say, you know, I think there's 15 different leadership styles out there. I mean, I guess depending upon who you talk to, but what would you say is your leadership style?
I would say collaborative. I really love working with a team. I love, you know, just the healthy debate and everybody's perspectives, you know, sharing in how we are going to solve a problem, really talking about successes and failures and setting up, you know, systems so the people and the organization can be more sustainable and profitable over time. And I do think, you know, systems are important because they help the organization function in a good way. They allow people to know, you know, what to expect. And, you know, over time, systems change and are improved. But in the end, just a collaborative work team would be my style.
That's so interesting that you said systems and processes. And I've just seen it. I kind of resisted that when Greg and I first started our business, but I have seen through the years, you can't scale. You cannot scale without the systems and the processes. And I think to your point, it helps everyone understand, you know, kind of where you're going. It's good for onboarding because new people coming in, you know, we've got, I don't even know how many lines of documentation, but every role in our company is documented. And you know, I'm a big believer. So systems, you know, processes, people, and technology, you know, all of those things are super important, right? And to have all those things align. Let me ask you this. And I mean, I don't jump on this bandwagon of being a female leader, but there are differences, and we're going to dig into your book. There are definitely differences in the way that women lead and men lead. So let me ask you this, as a female CEO, what are those things that you think, Rachel, that you brought to the table as a female CEO that really, you know, was helpful for the business?
Yes, I would say, well, I started running 8 of the stores after the acquisition in 1993 and with another female counterpart who is today our CEO, Tracy Hughes. And so I would say that, you know, as a leader and being female in a male-dominated area, I think it's just, you know, showing that you care about the people. You know, women are socialized to connect with others and to nurture and to care. And I remember, you know, being younger, and then after I got out and found my replacement in the field for those operations, Tracy and I both came in and started HR in training. And so I think that I often heard, you know, oh, you're too into the people, or you shouldn't, you know, be so into the people. But I always knew that that was, you know, my dad's guiding light, and inherently that was important to me, to connect with people and to, you know, see them for who they are. And also, like, I always felt, you know, leave your personal problems at the door. I mean, it's great to say that, but sometimes it's hard to do because people go through some really tough times. And I think having a level of understanding and, being able to have shared experience.
Empathy.
Yes. Empathy is so important. Yes. So it's exciting because I feel like in this book that I know we'll talk about, that we've really captured what women naturally bring to the table as principles of leadership, and the way that women lead, all people can lead that way. I also laugh, you know, of my, like my male MBA of WashU colleagues, you know, when I wrote this book, and they said, oh, it's a book for women. I said, no, it's based on women's psychology, but I never read, you know, John Maxwell or Stephen Covey and thought, oh my gosh, that book's not for me because it was written by a man.
Right.
Yes. So I think we both have obviously a lot to learn from the different styles of each other, because we are socialized in different ways, and that socialization, you know, turns into different leadership principles. And so, yeah, we can both learn from each other.
Yes, I agree. Well, let me ask you this. What along the way, and I know obviously your dad was a huge mentor for you, but I know mentorship is really important to you. And I know that, you know, one of your joys, Rachel, has been supporting women. But tell me about the role of mentorship for you. Did you have mentors outside of your dad that really poured into you, that, you know, and who would stand out to you today as a mentor? And how do you look at mentorship?
Yeah, I truly believe, like, the right people come into your life at the right time. And I feel like I personally have been on a lifelong journey of learning, and at all these different steps, you know, from my first boss at Taco Bell in Miami, I learned things from him. And then I went to South Seas Plantation in Captiva Island as a training coordinator, and that boss, Cindy Johnson, I still stay in touch with today because she had such a profound impact. So I could go through 20 more names. I just feel like being open to learning from others, and especially in the convenience store industry, especially when I started out, it's so many family businesses, and we had our own share groups. And, you know, you go to the conventions at a nationwide level, you go to conventions at a statewide level, and you form all these relationships. And I feel blessed to have had so many mentors in my life. And now, you know, with who you started, Don Gunther, and he introduced me to a SCORE mentor, Jim Kornbleet. And I feel like the list could go on and on. So I feel like mentorship is so important. And just like any one person, we can't get all that we need from any one person. So there are many people that we learn from, and knowing who to call and who to pick that person's brain because of this specific problem is just, yeah, I feel like it's been the basis of my success. And whenever I can network or help people get together because I know this person knows this and this person needs this, I mean, that's just so, so rewarding.
Yeah. I could not agree with you more. I could not agree with you more. In fact, a lot of people have said, oh, Lisa, you're a connector. But I love that, Rachel, because I believe what you just said. I believe people come into your life when you need that, you know, need them. Right. And, I don't care who it is. I believe we can learn from other people and learn from their journeys. That's one of the joys that I have of doing this podcast, because I believe like you and I could be sitting in my office and I love just talking with you. And I'm just like, oh, I just want to soak up every minute. But when I can interview you and get your wisdom and then share it with other people for them to learn and grow too, I can't even tell you the joy that that brings me. And yes. You never know when you may say one thing that somebody, it triggers something with them and it's a light bulb goes on, right? So I so resonate with everything that you just said. I was going to talk to you about networking, you know, and how important that is in relationship building. And you've already answered it. It's like paramount, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel like I could write a whole book on all the different people that came into my life at specific times and that led to a specific purpose that was, you know, where the outcome was so successful. And that's, yeah. So I feel like, yeah, being open to it and, you know, saying yes, I just feel like that yes to taking the time to meet other people, because if you don't, you know, there's always that joke where it's like somebody's asking for something and it's like right there in front of them. They just had to open the door to see it. So I feel like you have to be willing to put your time in to network and collaborate and listen.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Well, final question before we take a quick break, and then we're going to dig into your book, The Sixth Level. I have it right here. I encourage everybody to go out and get the book. We're going to talk a lot about that. But, you know, how do you, and I know this is a hard question, how do you personally and professionally define success? And everybody has a different definition for success, but for Rachel Walls Andreessen, how do you define success?
Yeah, I would say is moving people, whether it's my family, my own three adult children, people and organizations forward. When I can come into a position and whether it's a not-for-profit, a for-profit, a board, and know that I have left that organization and its people better than when I came into it, that to me is success.
Yeah. That's a beautiful definition. I love that. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Rachel Walls Andreessen on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Rachel Wallace Andreasen. So, Rachel, I really want to jump into your book now. So you published this wonderful book. It was just 2024. I think you co-authored it, and you can talk a little bit about these folks if you want. Stacey Finer, Kathy Overbeck, Jack Harris. You had a few co-authors. One is a college professor or research expert. But tell me, first of all, you know, what is the story behind the book? What prompted you to write the book? Can you tell our listeners that story?
Yeah, I would love to. So when I was working in my family business and I had just finished the MBA program at WashU, I came back and talked to my family about, you know, succession planning. And so between our advisory board and the family, we had a 5-year succession plan. And I also had a President's Council group in St. Louis that was kind of my outside advisory board. And they said, I said, what can I do to prepare myself to be CEO in 5 years? And they said, find yourself your own executive coach. So I did a nationwide search through the YPO network and I found Dr. Stacey Finer. So we did the work within our family business, but Stacey and I just bonded and stayed friends. I was often a reference for her, and lots of times she wanted me to meet either her clients or colleagues that she felt we had similar stories. So in December of 2020, she invited me to the Berkshires for a conference. So I went and it was great. And I met Megan Eddings. And at the end of this 4-day conference, Megan Eddings, who is a contributor in the book, as well as this other gentleman, they both had amazing stories, entrepreneurial stories where they invented something, but they had to tell their story. That was kind of the essence of the retreat, is telling your own story. And so Megan just talked about the people, and you could just, her passion and her care and her commitment came through. So Stacey and I kind of debriefed at the airport, and I said, there is something to this. There is something about the way women think about other people and bring them into their story and their life and the connection. And so 6 months later, Stacey wanted me to meet another person. And then Stacey said, you guys should write a book together. And I said, I had just read the book Grit, who was also authored by a St. Louis author, Jennifer Bardot. And I said, I am happy to invest the time in writing a book, but Stacey, you have to be a part of it because it has to be based in research, has to be purposeful, and we have to be able to use it to move organizations forward. And so that is when the idea of the sixth level was born. You're correct. There are 3 other co-authors, and we work on the book constantly. Just after the podcast, we have our weekly meeting. And but we also have 16 contributors, and those contributors offered so much to the book and allowed us to prove out the methodology that we have proposed in the book of the sixth level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the sixth level, really the sixth level goes a step beyond. You guys kind of talk about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The last step, the fifth step, is self-actualization. But you guys talk about self in relation theory, you know, that human connection. So can you expound on that a little bit, Rachel? What is that? And then we've got...
Yes. Well, for many things, you know, medical studies and leadership models, women's psychology and women as a female species, you know, wasn't always used in the research. And so we took Maslow's hierarchy of needs because we felt that that was common, that most people had learned about Maslow in school, and self-actualization, meaning your own full potential. And we say that the sixth level goes beyond that because the most important leadership qualities are yourself in relation to others. So you learning through somebody else and you learning about yourself through the eyes of another. So that is the core psychological principle that was actually developed in the 1970s by several women, but led by Dr. Jean Baker Miller. So we're taking this book as like the foundation of leadership principles that have happened before and really building on it and saying, what is the next level? Because as you know, being in the technology industry, that AI is here and technologies, when we can, you know, they will replace or reduce human jobs. And so really what's left? Humans managing other humans and connecting with them and doing the best for the organization and for the individual that's working for your company. So to do that, we say you have to operate at the sixth level in order to experience that connection, the retention, and to make your organizational sustainable and profitable for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. You know, you do, Jean Baker Miller, you'd already cited her, but you know, you in here, you cite her and you say, women's sense of self becomes very organized around being able to make and maintain affiliations and relationships. You know, we're very much into, you know, having an emotional connection, reciprocity of care. You know, there are, what about mutuality of self and others? Can you expound on that one, Rachel?
Yeah, so mutuality is, you know, it's kind of beyond emotional intelligence. It's the two-way empathy. It is the connection. It's the rally cry around how you organize, like what you're doing, why are you doing it, and having everybody feel the purpose and feel inspired by the purpose and knowing that you're connected there as a team to, you know, help each other through it. So we have the great part about the book is that the first three chapters are a little bit educational, like just how men and women are socialized differently, which of course the Barbie movie brought that to the forefront in an extreme yes. way. But we explain it a little bit just to understand why are women more socialized to connect and to take care of children and elders, because we are socialized for the ethic of care, where men are really socialized to dominate, to seek separation, and ultimately, you know, fear the feminine. I, even though I have two boys and a daughter, and even though you think that you raise them all the same, you know, the socialization is real, because I did hear people say to my boys, don't cry to your mama, don't be a pussy. And so those are things that get in people's head and have them, you know, steer a different way. So socialization's real, but I don't feel like it's served anyone well. So we're really working to close the gap, and mutuality is, you know, one of the four core differentiators. And so anyway, the front of the book is educational, but the middle part of the book is color-coded into four different sections. So you can actually read our contributor stories about how they express mutuality in the workforce. So they're really mm-hmm. great examples and quick reads. And even there's questions and answers at the end. So you can kind of level yourself up and say, how well do I do this? Or, you know, or what could I do differently to increase mutuality with those I work with?
Yeah. And I love that, Rachel. I love that you've got those questions at the end, because I think, you know, so oftentimes we don't want to just blow through the reading. I mean, you want to take that time to kind of ask those questions, reflective questions, to kind of be introspective. I think that's how we get it into our DNA a little bit more, you know, and so I love that. And I love the cover, the color-coded piece. So we already talked about mutuality a little bit, but there are four core differentiators of the sixth level. Mutuality is one of those. What are the other three?
Yeah, the other three is, the second one is ingenuity, the ability to solve complex problems for the greater good of many. And so again, examples in the book. The third one is justness, full and fair representation. And I think that women, you know, when you look at the long line of history, you know, women are the first to be on the opposite side of justness. You know, they can, they just don't have the physical strength against, you know, somebody that wants to physically attack them. And when they're also, you know, not always the ones and historically to be promoted first, even though they may be doing the work. So I feel like they have an innate sense of injustice. So they are able to look across the entire workforce and say, hey, let's try to bring more fairness and equity across the board for everyone. And then the final one is intrinsic motivation. Intrinsic motivation is the willingness to go beyond your own self-interest for the greater good. And, you know, women do naturally do this too, because women typically are volunteers for PTO or classrooms or field trips or not-for-profit organizations and serve on many not-for-profits without pay, or stay-at-home moms and taking care of the family without pay relative to that domestic responsibility. So intrinsic motivation is about yourself doing more, which then inspires other people to do more. So bringing that passion and energy so you can infiltrate that throughout the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. Well, the last section, and you already talked about this, you touched on it really, is but how this new model of leadership is going to produce better outcomes. So tell our listeners, if you would, I mean, what are some of those outcomes, I mean, that you've personally seen when this sixth level is implemented, Rachel?
Yeah, so the outcomes, you know, can be varied based on your own company's, you know, culture and structure. But, you know, the ideal outcomes are to have your team increase your retention, increase your sustainability as a company, being able to be in business and add more jobs, being able to be profitable and be able to have a team cohesion where, you know, people are bringing their ideas forward so you can, catapult, you know, the direction that you're going and serve, you know, your clients and your customers better. So these four core differentiators are more universal principles when used together, eliminate the ability to miss or abuse power and really help lift the boat for all. So it is the next level of leadership. And yeah, and when practiced all together and understood, then a leader can lead in a better way, a more humane way, a more just way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the future, this is exactly, you know, what needs to happen. You know, there mm-hmm. needs to be more humanity in the workplace and, you know, more opportunities for all.
Yeah. And I know that you're on a mission to get the word out there, and you're going, I think you said, to Houston soon, you know, to speak. And so, you know, just a little sidebar conversation here, side note, you know, for any listeners that want to have Rachel come in and speak or do a book signing or, you know, have a panel discussion regarding this, please reach out to her, because I know that she would be really more than happy to come and do that. Well, I want to ask you, Rachel, because I know your Jewish faith and your Jewish heritage is super, super important to you. And I think your mom, right, was Jewish, right? And, or is Jewish rather, but, you know, you were the executive director of the Congregation Temple Israel from 2017 to just June of 2024. You just, you know, moved on
just
from that.
July 1st was my last day this month.
July 1st. So let me ask you this. How do you believe that your faith really has intersected with your leadership? How has it informed how you lead?
Yeah. It's definitely a part of who I am. And yes, you know, the essence of Reform Judaism is to repair the world, to make the world a better place than where you found it. And I feel like that premise is also part of my leadership. And I was, you know, honored to be able to be the executive director for 7 years. And I had been volunteering for the previous 10 years. And, you know, just, you know, there's a Hebrew word called Besheret, and it's basically that it was meant to be. And I feel like that has been, you know, what my life has been about. Every chapter was meant to be. And now this next chapter with the sixth level is meant to be. And serving for a not-for-profit. And people ask me that too. You know, you come from this large for-profit family business. I go to my spiritual family. And even though we had 850 families and a large preschool, you know, the staff was small. And so, but at the end of the day, like we said at the beginning, it is all about the people. It's all about, you know, transparency, giving everyone the tools and the information that they need to do to be successful And we had such a great staff at TI because they were passionate and they cared about the people, about our members, about the school, and mm-hmm. about the religion. And so I would say, yeah, my mom did an excellent job of integrating Judaism into our life and made a commitment, because obviously I grew up in Cuba, Missouri, so we had to drive into Creve Coeur in order to, you know, be connected to our synagogue and do all of the bar and bat mitzvahs and the confirmation. And yeah, so it's a commitment, but I do feel my life has been blessed because of it and is very intertwined.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yes, I think I remember reading something and somebody said, you guys were always there. You drove that commitment, yes. Driving in from Cuba. You guys were always there. You were involved. So I just love that. But, you know, that explains a lot, because I think even with your book, there is not a selfish bone in your body about that, Rachel. You are trying to make the world a better place. You are trying to elevate the leadership style for the next generation, right? And, you know, just what you just said about your faith, that's the whole premise there, is to make the world a better place, right? So it's completely all integrated. Well, I have a quick lightning round for you, just really kind of fun. What do you do for fun?
Oh, I love to walk for exercise in the morning, and I also love to ride horses.
Oh, you love to ride horses. See, I did not know that about you. Do you have a horse? Yeah.
I have a horse. Yeah, we have 6 horses between my kids and I, and we love to do a good horseback riding trip at Eminence or, you know, any park. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so awesome. I grew up with horses. We don't have any now, but I have always thought about it. Every time we do, though, we get a little fearful, because I know it's a lot of work, right? But there is something so special about a horse. I think Winston Churchill said, the outside of a horse is good for the inside of a man. And it's like they can see into your soul. I mean, there's just, I love horses. Love them. Well, where do you draw your energy from? Where do you draw your energy from? Because you got a lot, you're high octane, I would say. You got a lot of energy.
Yes. If you knew my mom, you would know exactly where I got all my energy from. She is high energy. I can't even keep up with my own mother. So, I've learned from the best. And, yeah.
And well, where does she get her energy from? From her faith?
I have no idea.
You have no
idea. She's really gifted in that area. I mean, she goes all the time.
Wow. An inspiration, I'm sure, you know, for you to watch her and see her living her best life still, you know. I love that. Well, what's next for you? I mean, just book tours and speaking engagements and things like that. What are you excited about?
So from the family business, we're working to bring in the third generation. So I'm proud to be able to help with that and focus more on, you know, philanthropy with the third generation. But yes, my big focus will be the 6th level and taking it into curriculum. We've talked as co-authors about, you know, just even getting in at the high school level with DECA and just the mindset and the thoughts of, you know, how high schoolers, because there's so many high schoolers that are in leadership positions. And so if we can help out there, and then also colleges and organizations. So yeah, we're putting together lots mm-hmm. of plans to really have the 6th level be, you know, common language and common knowledge to help organizations and people move forward.
Yeah. Well, I love that, because like to your point, you know, they're in leadership positions. Let that be their sandbox. Right? For them to play in and to get these things down into their DNA. So when they get in the workforce, it'll be just second nature. I love that.
Absolutely.
I've got a friend, Rachel, that I just talked to yesterday. She wrote The Listening Path. I need to connect you with her. But she has spent her whole career like learning the art of listening. And in talking to her yesterday, I got so excited, because she has actually written curriculum for 3rd to 5th graders. And, you know, she was in organizations and she still does that, but she is backing it up so that she can go in and teach at this 3rd to 5th grade to 8th grade level, you know, about listening and how you can increase your EQ by growing these listening skills. You know, I love it. I love that you're thinking about that for high schoolers. Well, this is called Something Extra. And Rachel, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yes, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts and I think about it every time somebody else answers. But I think my answer would just have to be humanity. Just we're all humans, we're all flawed, we're all complex, but you know, we're all living in this world together. So if every leader could expand their humanity and, you know, listen to others, try to understand and really, you know, try to leave the world in a better place and, you know, more tolerance, more understanding, more listening, but just overall more humanity.
That's good. That's good. I love it. Well, Rachel, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for making the time. I cannot wait for our listeners to hear your story and just to learn from you. And like I said, hopefully they'll go out and buy your book, maybe book you to speak, you know, and best of luck to you as you, you know, continue to make the world aware of the sixth level.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really enjoyed talking with you again. It was a pleasure.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.